Lot Radio.
This thing right here,
yeah.
It's for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.
We have and boom. There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughs up a lung. They're looking around. The Jumbotron shows and pans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And then at that particular time, I lost it. Devon's brother.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
Show this one, Mike.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, you know, people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic.
All right, welcome to RST One Mic. This is your man, D. Wilson. The theme of our show today is Game Done Change. And we'll talk about that. We'll get into the cipher in about 15 minutes where we'll be going around a number of topics where things were just good a week ago and now they're different now. And so look forward to doing that segment with my guys. Before I bring them on, I want to remind you all to go to realsportsguys.com. We launched a new website where you can follow all of our podcasts. You can, if you click on the podcast tab, you can catch up on the most recent podcast. There's a great one done by Sekou and Marcus on Hustle and Flows. That is a hot podcast. It's a specialty podcast. They put it out, you know, a couple times every quarter, or once or twice every quarter. But it's really themed. It's the intersection between sports, the hip hop, and music. They do an excellent one. That one's up there, as well as our most recent podcast we've done here on One Mic, with our previews of what's been happening here in the NFL, our divisional ones, along with our championship predictions. And a number of things that we talked about are coming true. There's some twists and turns in the story, and we'll get into some of those things as we go. But go to realsportsguys.com for all of that. I want to bring my guys on, guys who keep it going, keep us moving here, who bring that energy and that and make it so great to do this podcast. I'm going to bring the youngin on first because, you know, he's getting ready. You know, he's on with us, but he's also trying to – He's a practitioner. He's a coach. He's doing that to get ready for a game tonight as well after the show. But I want to bring him on and see how he's doing. The youngin, what's up? What's up, Darnell? How you doing?
Oh, is back and in full swing. We had a couple matchups last week. The first one, we got to see Khalil Mack versus David Bakhtiari on pay-per-view. And then Sunday, we got to see another one. A heavyweight matchup with Marshawn Lattimore and DeAndre Hopkins. Like, we're seeing I'm just excited to see these matchups. Like, these are some players that people don't necessarily look for all the time, but, like, football is back, man. I'm excited. We got to saw your Steelers. Well, I don't know if you want to talk about that, but the Patriots are looking like they are poised and ready to repeat. So, football is back. And
you like dealing some sore spots. We're going to talk about that. I'm not as down as I think people might think. So we're about to talk about that. But yeah, them Steelers. But we'll get to that in, later on as we move in. But yeah, the matchups. And then Gerald McCoy actually squaring off and about to knock somebody out last night. We'll talk about that. It actually showed that he has that power punch to put you. He'll put you to sleep if you let him hit you with. Let him. Hit you with that love tap. So yeah, people getting ornery early in this NFL season. Like, the playoffs are on the line right now, and we got to bring in the old vet. We got to bring in the one, you know, who set the screen and roll. You know, something that the national team probably needed as they took that beat down from France and from Serbia. But you know, he's always consistent. You know, he'll knock the J down from the corner. You know, he's got that Cliff Levingston vibe to him. leave alone. What's up, Hank? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. And before we get going on this show, I want to let you, Dino, and I want to let young Darnell know right now that I am doing this full show with my watch on. I don't want y'all getting all upset asking me why I got on my watch. It ain't hurting nobody. I'm going to do me. But I just want to let y'all know that when y'all go back to pay this thing back, that Hank said he had his watch on the whole time. I don't want nobody questioning it. I'm telling you, that's what I do.
All right, ODJ. Odell Beckham, killing him. All right, you got to get it on. My goodness. My goodness. all the drama up there in Cleveland. We're going to get into that one big time. All right, like I said, this is RG. We're about to enter the open mic to get real again. Go to realsportsguys.com for all things RG. We'll be in the cipher where we're talking about the theme of the show. Game Done Changed. We'll get a couple of topics. We'll be talking about what's happening in the NFL, some of the latest stuff happening in the NFL and what's going on there as part of that segment. But in our opening mic, we're going to hit a couple of things around the world of sports. We're going to start with college football, who's hot and who's not. Just in our early couple of weeks of the season. And so it's a segment where we'll talk about, each of us will talk about whatever one or two teams that we think are hot, and then we'll come back with a couple of teams that we think are not. I'll start out this segment with who I think is hot. It's just my theme is North Carolina Tar Heels and Mack Brown. Man. Mack Brown went back to North Carolina. I remember when he was there before. One of my former teammates, Danny Vuletich, played safety for him. I remember them playing against Oklahoma back in the day before he went on to take that Texas job. You know, Mack had built a program, went to Texas, you know, and did some great things at Texas. And, that kind of forcible retirement in the way that Texas kind of walked him out a little bit. And then you thought he was out of coaching. And then next thing you know, he's back at Carolina. And then opens up with a win against South Carolina, that kind of rivalry early on in the season, being the SEC team, and then get Miami. And, you know, Mack is going to build a program. And when you think about the kind of recruitment that he can pull from that North Carolina, South Carolina space in terms of the talent that's around him and his ability, because he coached at Texas, to do some national recruiting, it's going to be interesting to see where that program is going. But just, you know, to be in 2-0 out the gate when most people probably would have predicted they would have been 0-2 is an amazing start. And then those LSU Tigers, they discovered the forward pass. After years and decades of playing the way they played, Joe Burrow passed for 471 yards and 4 touchdowns against the Longhorns in their backyard. Now, the defense played a little bit, gave us some big plays. Against the Longhorns, they gave up some plays, but you know, you think Dave Aranda, you know, the superstar defensive coordinator, former Badger defensive coordinator, will right that ship. You know, LSU always is going to have a great defense. He'll right that ship, but the way their offense is playing, the way they're attacking, and when you think about the receivers that, you know, we just talked about Beckham, and we're going to refer to him in the watch, and Landry, and I mean, you can go to list of these LSU receivers who are in the league, coming from a program that didn't throw the ball as much as they probably do. Now they're opening up, and you see what happens when you have that kind of talent. So I think, you know, two teams that I think are hot out the gate. There's a couple other ones, including, you know, I think about what the Badgers are doing right now and a couple other teams you can name. But, you know, these two teams are just kind of, for different reasons, have caught my attention. All right. Hank, who do you have?
Well, you took one of mine because I sure was going to say LSU. But that had to be that game with Texas down there in Austin was probably one of the most exciting games of the weekend. They was back and forth. It was as good as advertised, with two ranked teams playing each other, and they went after each other. And it's refreshing. It really is refreshing to see LSU, you know, come out of what they used to be. And you know, the narrative down there was that they had a forward passing game, that they would be a national championship contender all the time. In fact, let me throw this at you. You know that Burrow had thrown for more yards the last quarterback at LSU to throw for that many yards. I don't know if you guys remember him. I know you remember. Rohan Davey. Okay?
Mm.
Big brother that was just chucking it down the field. Okay? And so they're going to be fun to watch. If for no other reason, you got to get somebody else to challenge Bama in the SEC. Okay? You can't just be a foregone conclusion that Georgia and Alabama plays, you know, in the SEC championship game. So it was good. It's a breath of fresh air as far as I'm concerned, as far as from a competitive standpoint, that LSU, you know, is doing this thing. But the team that I want to say that's hot is right here in Big Ten country, okay, and it's in the DMV. You know, we're talking about the Maryland Terrapins. Mike Locksley is taking the team, and he has just turned it all around. Josh Jackson, you know, the local native here from Saline, you know, the transfer from Virginia Tech. They always had a fast team. You know, they always scared me as far as some of the talent that they had. But the fact that they went up against a ranked Syracuse team and just blew their doors off, you know, that's 2 weeks in a row that Maryland has scored over 60 points, 79 points the first week against Howard, which people kind of tossed off. But then, you know, you go against a ranked team, and Dino Babers is not a bad coach, and that Syracuse team, you know, is going to try to make some hay. They got Clemson this week, and they could have been, you know, guilty of looking ahead, but, you know, they got their heads taken off by the Terrapins. That was a thorough thrashing, and that team is going to be, and now they're ranked, and that's a team that's going to really open some eyes. They got to play both Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State this year. So watch out for Maryland. They look really, really, really good. And they scare me. I mean, they scare me. I watched them last year. Again, a lot of speed. And now you've got an offense that, you know, here in Ann Arbor, we was hoping we would see. But, you know, Locksley is really doing the job. There's a lot of passion there. And that team, now, they got a big test. They go on the road for the first time against Temple. And so we'll see if they can do that again. Then that's a force to be reckoned with.
All right. We got those two, Maryland and LSU, a couple of LSUs up there. Who do you have? Who do you have, Darnell? It's hot.
All right, so I have two teams and one player, right? So my two teams that are rolling are going to be the exact same that Hank said, LSU, because, you know, they got Juggler Joe Burrow making – plays downfield that you haven't really seen in the past LSU quarterbacks. And also you have a secondary that was challenged a lot, but you still have a lot of young talent on there. You have guys like Derek Thingley Jr. You have Christian Fulton. You have guys like, Grant Delpit. So they're the team that's really they have the best win. I'm saying they have the best win out of any team thus far in college football. And the other team I'm going to go with Maryland. Maryland, their offense is high powered. They have that coach from Alabama that came over. And the player I was going to say was Jalen Hurts. Hurts. It seems like he is poised to be the next in line for the Heisman Trophy, just like Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray before him. This guy is. He's putting up ridiculous numbers, and the system seems to be really working for him. And he's a mature quarterback. I'm not sure if he's in his fourth or fifth year in college, but that seasoning is showing. So he is on fire, and he's on pace to be a Heisman Trophy candidate.
That's a good point. Thanks for that little ripple. Yeah, I think you're right on Jalen Hurst and as being a higher player and just kind of transitioning in and immediately, you know, endearing himself to his team, and you can see they rally around him and just the way they play with him. I think the leadership that he brings, in addition to how he's playing, has said everything about it. You can tell, like, everybody around that program really loves having him lead that team. Let's talk about who's not. Hank, I'll let you go. Who's not?
Okay, let me tell you who's not. And I want you to think about this as I say this, okay? You're not going to get what you think you're going to get, okay?
Okay.
You're not going to get what you think you're going to get, because as much as us around here, wants to raise all kind of hell about what happened on Saturday between Michigan and the Army. Michigan is 2-0. The team that's not hot is the Tennessee Volunteers. Okay, now why I bring up – now they're 0-2, and their two losses are abysmal. Okay, because both of their losses was at home. I think they lost the first game to, like, Georgia State or Georgia Southern, whatever. It wasn't the Bulldogs. Then they're winning the game against BYU at home. They got a fourth and whatever, BYU does. The guy chucks – the quarterback chucks the ball up, finds a receiver down the field by himself, and if he was fast at all, they lose that game. They end up losing the game anyway in overtime. Okay, this is the Tennessee Volunteers. This is the Tennessee Volunteers that, and I'm going to say this to all these fans who's got coaches, that their teams are respectable. They got teams that are good, that can contend every year. This team won a national championship earlier than Michigan. They won one in 98. They have a Heisman Trophy winner. Okay, or no, they didn't have a Heisman Trophy. They were a Heisman Trophy runner-up, Peyton Manning. They had a very rich football tradition, okay? They've fallen on hard times, very hard times. They're 0-2 in a very strong league, the SEC. No chance of winning nothing, okay? This is the Tennessee Volunteers. You know, they got the University of Chattanooga this week. If they don't win this game, for whatever reason, they could go 0-4, okay, in the SEC. Tennessee, think about the Rocky Top. This is who Michigan was battling for the largest stadium in college football. Be careful what you ask for when they come talking about changing coaches and et cetera. Because I tell you right now, I don't ever want to beat Tennessee.
Amen. And one of the reasons when people talk about the SEC, you know, and it's like it's really about these top three teams who've been consistent. Because a lot of these other teams have been volatile. The SEC East has been garbage for a long time.
Yes, they have.
And people talk about the strength of their conference. It's really about, you know, Alabama, LSU, Georgia consistently. Then you'll add a couple pieces here and there, top-heavy, dominant. But the rest of them have been so volatile. And Tennessee is a great example of that volatility, along with South Carolina, volatile. Like, a lot of these teams have been volatile. Florida, volatile. You know, Georgia's.
A&M.
Really big game. You know, there's a lot of volatility and with dominance at the top. And, you know, when I hear all these other SEC teams talking about who they are, I'm like, y'all, Kentucky, y'all just now made it to whatever. Don't stop talking. You know, it's these top teams. The work that, and where was Alabama before Saban got there? You know, Saban's responsible for really for two programs turning around. LSU was struggling until Saban got there.
Exactly.
Alabama was struggling. Then you talk about Urban Meyer at Florida, as well. So I mean, you can really link it down to like three coaches who have kind of held the brand for the SEC, but everybody else has kind of been riding the coattails, and people have not understood. Tennessee, who nationally, growing up, most of our time watching, particularly, you know, through the 90s, in whatever, was a dominant program with, like, dominant players coming out of there. Like, in ways that you see, like, Clemson and Tennessee. And, like, so when you say you don't ever – yeah, people need to watch what they talking about, how fast they want to push a coach out. Because
– Let me say this, because here's what you see. Okay, yeah. You go back to when they won the national championship in 98, okay? And Fulmer was their coach, all right? And then after that, they've been, like, doing this carousel of coaches to try to get it going. Now, see, once upon a time, you know, people who don't really pay a whole lot of attention to SEC football, Tennessee is one of those teams that they've got several rivalries, okay? They've got the Tennessee-Florida rivalry. You know, they've got several rivalries in the SEC, just like other schools, all right? They've got a huge tradition, Rocky Top, that whole thing, okay? And they are irrelevant in the SEC right now, absolutely irrelevant. Nobody's talking about them. They better win because they're not going to win, okay? They've got – and here's the thing. Once you lose like that in the college game, your recruiting suffers. which helps, and your player development suffers. All right, and now you don't have the players to try to build that program back up. This is so important because you're talking about, and the reason why, you know, you make the emphasis when you're talking about who's not is because when you start seeing major programs fall, they don't get back up right away. So just because it took you, you know, fail to rock bottom, you may not come back, you know, in 3 years, in 4 years, in 5 years, depending upon how far you've fallen. This is going to be one we can watch because this team is in rock bottom. Let's see how long it takes for Tennessee to come back. And they've been in rock bottom now for several years.
Yeah, and if any indication, Tennessee fans, of where you are, is the fact that you had to go to, like, your eighth person on your list for your coach. So you need to figure out how to stick with Pruitt. No matter what's happening, you got to have continuity. Great program,
right.
Have continuity.
And patience.
And you get patience. You're not going to get it right away. You got to realize you're not who you think you are. You are
exactly
what your record you are and what your record's been. And so you either can humble yourself and build over time, and that's where Fulmer is going to have to be the person at the gate pushing them as they're coming to the gate with all the well, you know how they're doing stuff. They're going to come to the gate with them flames and everything else, try to push that thing down, knock that thing down, and take over. You're going to have the big boosters and everybody else trying to put their 2 cents in. And he's going to have to be strong enough to say, look, we got to stick with a plan because we are not who we think we are. We got to build. We got to let people know. Part of recruiting is knowing that somebody's going to be there. And
right,
if it's Jerry Pruitt, then these high school coaches and folks got to know he's going to be there. They're not going to commit to sending players to a place that they think the coach is not going to stay. And so, you know, that's the only way you can rebuild it. You can't. There's no shortcuts. There's no shortcuts to this. All right, youngin, who you got? Who's not?
Wait a minute. You're telling me Tennessee won a national championship in football?
Yes, they did, 1998.
I know.
But they won it. Trust me, I'm telling you.
This is so great because that's
far away from
God. Yes. This is so, Darnell, this is why it's important to have you because in your perspective, Tennessee is who they are. They've always been. Like, you don't see Tennessee that way, do you?
I don't see Tennessee as a great program. One thing you know about Tennessee is Peyton Manning. That's it. And Peyton Manning, he was in the Heisman Trophy race when I was like 1 year old. So Tennessee being good has been far away. They had Arian Foster for like a few years. They had maybe Eric Berry for a little while, but they're not necessarily a top program in our eyes, I guess.
I love your perspective. So who's not? Who's not?
Chip Kelly and the UCLA Bruins.
Amen.
This team is
amen.
This is not a Chip Kelly football team. I don't understand. Like I watched them play a couple times, and they do not resemble any of the teams I've seen him have in Oregon. Any of the teams he had, and even in the NFL when they say he underachieved with the Philadelphia Eagles, they still don't look as good as they did on that level. Like, I don't know if it's going to take years to gel or recruiting-wise or what's going on, but they have to get it together. So UCLA is a team that's definitely not hot right now. And the other team I was going to say is Tennessee, of course, but you already got Tennessee. And they can't. They paid – what was that first team they lost to?
Georgia Southern or something like that.
They paid Georgia State like $100,000, something like that, to come in and beat them. So that explains it for itself.
Wow.
You got to throw an honorable mention out there, though, for Florida State, okay?
Well,
Florida State won.
Let me go.
Go.
I'm about to give you an opportunity to comment on that. My two teams, I'll start with the one, Florida State. Willie Taggart, man. I know they say you the lost Harbaugh son. You're about to go find them if you don't start winning quickly. You know, they lost to Boise State out the gate, but they only beat, and then their second game, they played Louisiana Monroe. They beat them 45-44. That's really a loss when you're Florida.
Right, right.
That's a loss. I'm not going to give you credit for that one. And then you got to play Virginia. You got to play Louisville, who looks like they're flying around. like none of these games before their bye week is winnable at this point. And so, you know, Willie Taggart, they need to he needs to have a good weekend. He needs to win this Virginia game, and he needs to win this Louisville. I mean, he needs to win all these games before the bye week, because then he got Clemson, and that could be the game you get fired in, because
right.
they beat you, because you're playing at Clemson, and if they beat you, they might not let you on the plane. You know how they did your boy out of USC? They might not let him. They might not let you on the plane, brother. They have like it's an attitude thing. You know they got talent. Their offensive line is not blocking. This is when you build a program, you got to get the right assistants. Like, it can't just be about you, Willie. Like, you got to be a CEO, brother. And you got to start up front. You got to start. You know you're going to have talent. You better have a good defensive line coach and a good offensive line coach. You got to start there. You know you're going to have skilled players. But if you can't control the line of scrimmage when you're playing, you're in trouble. And they constantly struggle to control the line of scrimmage. So that's my one thing. So that's why I didn't let you go on that one. And the other one's Miami. And I got to say this because I was the big, you know, person for Manny. And I'm not, you know, they should have beat Florida. They should have beat Florida. But the Florida loss killed me. It's the North Carolina loss. You can't,
yeah, that was, that would hurt.
You can't lose to Carolina. Now you go 0-2. You got a loss, not only in your conference, in your division. So, you know, yeah, you go play Bethune-Cookman in Central Michigan. I just saw them up here against the Badgers. The Badgers crushed them. They might not be okay right now because they still recover from the Badgers. You don't get a real another test to really understand what you can do until after your bye week you play Virginia Tech. And then you got Virginia, and so they have time to right this ship. But Miami, this is not the Miami I was expecting to see, especially defensively. I thought if nothing else, they would be able to hold. They'd have a top, you know, five defense. And be able to hold while the offense would grow. I'm not seeing what I need to see. You know, he's not in trouble. You know, he'll be okay getting through this year. But, you know, I expected them to be a 9, maybe 10. They could win 10 games, which, you know, they're going to have to fight. And that loss to Carolina, I think, was just a loss they shouldn't have. At this point in their program, they shouldn't take. Even though Mack Brown is masterful, you know, he knows how to be. He's a great tactician. He knows how to motivate. That's a game you got to win. In the Florida game, you should be 2-0, to tell the truth, but they're 0-2. So Miami, and I think we found some really good teams. Y'all did a good job of that. With the short notice, y'all guys were off the hinge on that. All right, we're going to go into what I think is an interesting conversation before we get into the cipher. Our cipher, again, is the game done change. We'll get into that, talking about some NFL talk. That'll happen here. Here pretty quickly. We'll get into that. But wanted to talk a little bit about the national team. You know, is the national program in trouble? Is it kind of like, you know, I'm a Rocky fan. Is it kind of like when Drago was exposed? I love in the corner. He's like, he's a human. He's a man. He's a, whatever he was saying when he cut him. You know, they realized that these guys aren't who they already are. You know, Kobe came out recently. He came out here right after the recent loss and said that the world is caught up to the U.S. and we just have to get used to winning some, losing some. What's your thought about where our national program is based on their performance? At best, they'll probably get, what, sixth place, which is the worst.
Seventh place.
Seventh place, is it?
They're
not,
yeah, that's they're playing for seventh place right now.
Yeah, seventh place, which is the worst they can be. I mean, this is the problem. So what's your thoughts? I'll start with you, Darnell. Get your perspective.
Yeah. Oh man, I've been wanting to talk about the Olympic team for not Olympic team, but the FIBA game for a minute. But this team, I disagree with Kobe when he says the European teams are catching up this like that much. I do agree that they are catching. The gap is closing. And that is a fact. But you got to realize we did bring our C team, either C or D team, actually, with the players that were out there. But still, there's no real excuse. They lost back-to-back games against Serbia, as I said before the tournament. I told you Serbia was going to be a problem. I thought Serbia would win the tournament, but they got upset by Argentina and Luis Scola, out of all people. Luis Scola did it again yesterday.
That's my man.
The French team. So
that's
Luis
right.
Scola, I'm surprised he could still ball. But they lost to France and Serbia back-to-back two decent teams, but two teams that the U.S. is winning against as well. But the gap is closing, but I don't think it's all the way closed, because if we bring Kawhi Leonard and, you know, if guys like Kawhi, Karl Anthony Towns, Paul George, those guys out, then we should be able to win pretty handily. So that's my take.
Yeah, and I think you made some really good points. And I had, as I was thinking about this before I go to Hank, there's a couple things that I kind of summarized a little bit as I was watching this. A couple of effects. One is what I call the Paul George effect. I think when Paul took that fall, you know, as they were preparing for the Olympics, and you just see the devastation on it, I think the proximity of particularly the World Championships to the start of the season amplified that effect in ways that I don't think it'll do for the Olympics. So to me, the question is really about how we want to perform in the World Championships, less the Olympics. I think the Olympics will always get the best players because these guys are so brand conscious. You can't have a better stage, a global stage, in the Olympics, which means we'll always have really good players playing on the Olympic team. Where I think is going to be more of an issue where people gain confidence, and the key is you don't want people gaining any confidence, is in the World Championship model, the FIFA model, where it's located. Our ability to build the kind of squad and the incentives to have people play is always going to – so we got to figure out how to have a combination of maybe some top college – because it's not about skill level. It's about people's ability to adjust to the style. And you could have some of your top college players mixing with some pros in a way and still have, a really good team. And so how you build that team is different. And I think Colangelo's got to think differently about that a little bit. The other thing I call is the Coach K effect. I think college coaches, and I think what made Coach K effective is that he's neutral. And I think this is under appreciated, under thought when you think about the Olympic program and why it's been good. Not just his ability to engage with the players without it being perceived as an effort to sway and build relationships in a way that you might have Popovich in, because he's actually a member of the coaching community in the NBA, I think is underplayed a little bit. I think the neutrality of a top coach like Coach K as a college coach coming together with this, with a mix of professional assistant coaches and college coaches, I think is a really good formula that I think people undervalue. College coaches also, I think one of the things I think was a struggle, you talk about the players, but I also think it was a coaching issue, is college coaches face more gimmick defenses. So when you're playing against France and you have one of the top shot blockers in the world, Gobert, standing in the middle of the lane, college coaches adjust to more things. They see triangle twos. They see all these gimmick defenses. There's a way that they think about the game that I think professional coaches aren't always exposed to. And I think that's another value of having a college coach leading the strategy. And then I think college coaches have much more of a talent development framework that I think is important when you think about the FIFA team. I think this is really more about the FIFA program and our approach to FIFA World Championships than it is the Olympics. And I think you also got to think about skill over will. I think you got to get bigs. You got to think about a K-Love model. You got to find bigs who can shoot and rebound. Like they're kind of – those kind of cats, you got to find your Kevin Love type bigs when you play an international ball to pull those bigs out of the lane so that you can open the lane up for your other players. And then the other thing I think is important that other teams do a better job is they appreciate the aging stars. The fact that they did not allow Carmelo to play is, I think, an issue. I think Carmelo could have helped him here because you can play him in a lot of different ways, and he understands international basketball. He's got so much exposure to it that he's good in those important times when you're helping, you know, people who haven't had as much exposure to playing in this space. You know, to not have Carmelo on there in ways that you watch other programs you almost have to push their aging stars out. Even when they're not, significant players in the NBA, they're always welcome on their national teams. And I think, you know, in a space like the FIFA one especially, having some aging stars who can still somewhat play like Carmelo and some others who are still looking to get that look, that space, be in that space, is important part. So those are the things that I saw here that I think are really important kinds of things to think about. All right, Hank.
Listen, I think you make great points. I think you're making great points about coaching. I think you're making great points about, the international game. However, it just appears to me that the United States and the NBA as a whole just do not take these world championships seriously. If I recall, several years ago, they lost and came in third. They had Shaq on the team. I mean, they was too busy partying and having a good time versus trying to win the world championships. And I think that's what this is. You don't get to see your marquee players. And the other piece, too, I want us to really pay close attention to is the timing of the world championships, especially coming right off of the long NBA season. And the players that you really legitimately wants to play on these teams, these players are playing, you know, late into May into June, you know, depending upon where their teams go in the playoffs. And now you've got you a short turnaround. You don't have any recovery time, and now you're back. You're playing in the World Championships. World Championships are playing now, and lo and behold, what happens in a couple of weeks? Training camp for the NBA. So you don't get a lot of the players that you want to have play in these. And then you have to ask the players who want to play with in it, is this something that you are really going balls to the wall to try to win, or is this just an extended training camp for you to work on some things? Because when you got professional players, this obviously isn't their bread and butter. This is, you know, the world championship so the United States can field a team. And that's the way I kind of look at it because I think the other – countries, and rightfully so, you know, put a little bit more emphasis into it because, of course, you want to beat the United States. Of course, you want to go out there and win the world championships with them competing. You don't care who the players are individually, but this is the United States. This is professional athletes, and you want to go out there and you want to, you know, make your stamp on it to take them out. I think you see that now even more so with the other countries, and you're absolutely right. They're going to use their veterans more so because they know that they have the experience to play against that caliber of talent. So I think all of that is true, but it's not lost on me that when we get around to the Olympics, all of these players are more than willing to make that sacrifice of trying to win a gold medal because there's a lot that goes on to it, especially the exposure, especially what they can do with it, especially how they can parlay that into endorsements. It's all about money as far as that's concerned anyway. But I think that, you know, that with these, you just don't see – first of all, you don't see the best players come out and want to play in these things. And then you have to really ask yourself what sort of effort, as I stated before, are they putting into it, knowing that training camp is coming in a couple of weeks, and I'm really out here to try to work on my game and do whatever else I can do to try to parlay that possibly into my next contract.
And I think you hit on it, but you still can get the Lou Williams type, and those cats can ball in this space. You can still get Steph's brother. I mean, those guys can ball in this space. So I also think that it's not always about getting the best players. It's about
getting
the best.
I agree, but listen to what you just said, okay? You got those kind of – and they're going to do it. They're going to work on their game. Steph's brother is working on his next contract. A lot of people didn't even know that he could ball like that unless you was watching the NBA all the time. You know, until you saw him in the playoffs and what kind of impact he can have on another team. So those kind of players, absolutely, they're going to come out there and they're going to try to get themselves together. But I'm talking about as far as the team concept and trying to go out there and win the world championship. I don't know if that level of emphasis is there for those players.
No, but when you got I think some of those guys who are that next-tier guy, if you sell it to them right, going to come out. It's a great opportunity for them to showcase because they don't have that kind of limelight. And I think I don't think you just need NBA players. I think you can have some of the high-level college players. In the international ball, it's just about finding
out. I wish they would.
it won't work.
I think it will. Our youngins were competing pretty good when we were doing college guys when they were all playing professionals. So I'm saying that it's a style game. We're losing the people. Mm-hmm. We're losing the people who are not as talented, but they know how to play in a system. It's not talent. Right. It's system. And so the guys who know how to play in systems are guys like Lou Williams. They know what systems are. You know, these other guys who are when you get Jason and you get some of these other guys out here, they are the system. If you can use the world championships as your developmental space, because it's never going to be a high priority for your top players. But because you use it that way, you can get those guys together sooner and longer because they have an interest in doing it. You got to change. I think it's a real conversation about how you choose you treat the world championship rather than the overall. The Olympics is a totally different thing. We're gonna really see when you start putting the squad together that they got, when you start putting AD on there, you start putting those cats that's gonna be a totally different team that you're gonna see playing in the Olympics. But I think where we have to begin to focus on is those other competitions, the ones that's kind of focused on North America. When we're talking about the World Championship, the FIFA, that's where we got to have a different strategy, have a talent development strategy that can be at a high level. That's what I'm saying. And I think once you start going after these big-time athletes, they start turning you down. That's where the second-tier guys start. And you got to go get Carmelo. If Carmelo wants to play, let him play. He has been an international basketball killer. Like, if you're talking about performance, nobody's performed better than Carmelo internationally. He just knows how to – that style of game works for him. You can't say no to it. They wouldn't say no to Manu, would they?
No.
So why are we saying no to Carmelo?
Again, I think when you start saying stuff like that, again, we can go back to the conversation we had about Carmelo potentially being blackballed by the league. You know, it's real funny to me that he's out there and he's not playing in that either. And see, if that's an extension of the NBA, then let the conspiracy theorists, let them have the floor.
That's it. All right, when we come right back, we're going to take a break, come back. We're going to enter the cipher. Yes, the game done changed. One mic on the RSG platform. Again, go to realsportsguys.com for everything RSG. We talked about a lot of stuff. We just finished up the open mic. We're about to enter the cipher, and the theme of the cipher, which is the theme of the show, the game done changed. We're talking about things that looked like they were going one way, they came back the other way, things, assumptions we were making, what was going on here in this early part of this NFL season, and you know where we're going with this one thing. You know, Antonio Brown found himself in another controversy after he's running through his backyard celebrating that he was released from the Raiders, and then bam, you know, radio report for Monday night, and then things just happen. Report comes out about alleged sexual assault, and now all this stuff going up to Monday night with the Patriots is up in the air. A lot of stuff is going on. Looks like he's going to play. A lot of new chatter. He's on Instagram. The game done changed. We were talking about, well, the Steelers are well, how are they feeling now at the Patriots game, and then another controversy comes. Bill Belichick doesn't want to talk about it at the podium. You know, guys, I don't want to adjudicate the case, the alleged sexual assault. What I want to talk about is just your overall view. If you're the Patriots, how you see this in terms of where the league is on this. But just Antonio and this whole idea of there's a slippery slope when it's all about your brand. When these things start to just pile it up. You know, Hank, I know you always got something to say, so I'm going to let you start out there. I'll go to Darnell to bring us the new school perspective.
Okay, well, okay, in a nutshell, AB is a basket case, okay? That boy, he's about as sharp as a bag of wet mice. I don't understand what he's doing, okay? The timing of his alleged sexual assault is kind of interesting to me when it came out. But the thing is like what I don't understand is he raises all of this hell in Pittsburgh, right? He calls Ben Roethlisberger a racist, all right? And they get rid of him. They release him. So then he goes to Oakland. Oakland signs him with all of this incentive-laden money. He don't want to come to camp. He don't want to come to practice, all right? He's saying he's working his tail off, all right? But then he gets into it with Mike Mayock. The GM calls him a cracker, loses his mind because he suspends him, because he's not showing up, all right? He's under contract. And then, you know, he apologizes to the team, crying and et cetera. Then he goes back and he records Gruden in a conversation. Then when he realized that his money has been suspended, then he wants his release. So then he gets his release. Now he's dancing and playing and acting silly. All right. Then he signs with the Patriots. Then when he signs with the Patriots, then here comes a sexual assault. I don't know. Okay, there's an awful lot of baggage there. Now, he's very, very, very talented. Okay, Drew Rosenhaus, who is his agent, who, by the way, was the same agent that Terrell Owens had. Drew Rosenhaus, they ought to call him Squirrel. Because he get all the nuts. He really do. He get all the nuts. I don't understand this about these prima donna wide receivers. The thing is about it, though, with the Patriots are going to have a very short leash with him, as talented as they are. Now, Randy Moss went to New England, and, you know, Randy Moss was supposed to have been a bad boy, but Randy Moss toned it down when he got to corporate America in Boston. And had one of the best seasons that he had with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Is Antonio Brown mature enough to do that? I don't know. I haven't seen it. You can say whatever you want to say about Moss, but Moss never did anything this crazy. This young man on the surface has cost himself tons of money. Tons of money. Okay? Now, and he's also being labeled as a bad teammate. All right? That's not good to have. Those are two labels in the NFL that you can't have. You can't be stupid and cost yourself money and then also be considered a bad teammate, being a selfish teammate. Okay, you can be a prima donna but put it together on the field. But when you won't even practice with your team, he's practicing with the Patriots right now. Okay, and everything is pending with this assault. And just keep in mind with this assault thing, it's not a criminal charge, it's a civil charge. Okay, which also gives you a whole lot of questions there. If it was as bad as it was all that, why didn't it go to court? But we can talk about that on another day. But as far as AB is concerned, the odds should be, how long does he stay with the Patriots? Does he really shut his mouth, get his job done, and become that receiver that we was all crazy about in Pittsburgh, or does he become what he's been, what we've seen in the last 8 to 10 months? Stay tuned.
All right, Darnell, what say you?
I don't even know where to start. Well, I'm going to start from, I guess, the beginning of the Antonio Brown Raiders saga. So Antonio Brown, he seems like he's doing – he seemed like he was doing one thing after another thing to not play football. Like a week or so ago, I was thinking – I thought to myself, I was thinking, maybe Antonio Brown really is going through some mental health issues. Maybe he is, like, mentally ill. So I didn't really want to make fun of him or something like that. But when that new video came out, when he got traded, it definitely rose some ideas that maybe he planned this out. Like it was some sort of master plan or something like that to get himself with the Patriots. Because you look back to last year when he was requesting a trade, he wanted to go to the Patriots, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, of course, refused to trade him there because why would they trade him to the Patriots and help their enemy? So maybe he was trying to find his way onto the Patriots roster, but that's on the football side of it. But the more serious side of it is the sexual assault allegation, and this – the timing of it, all of the things surrounding of it very questionable. It happened like the week, pretty much the day after, almost the day after he got signed to the Patriots, this came out. And not only that, it came out, the accuser for this crime, they said this weekend she's having a wedding, right? She's getting married. So the timing is very interesting. And there's also been a leaked email from the accuser to Antonio Brown talking about how she owns him now and she's going to ruin his life and she's coming after his money and stuff like that. So I don't necessarily know if this is true. I hope it's not true because, of course, I don't wish for anybody to be a victim of sexual assault. But we're going to see how it plays out. But it's not a good situation, to say the least.
Yeah. When I watched this, you know what brought clarity to me about what's happening with him? Is watching the 30 for 30 on Rodman. Watching the 30 for 30 on Rodman. If you know Antonio Brown's story about the way in which he had to live growing up, and just some of the tough things that I think he's shared just about upbringing, everything else. I think all this stuff. If you had a chance to watch the 30 for 30 on Rodman, there's a way he's trying to hold on to power, resource, choice that seems irrational to other folks that was part of his growing up and survival. And he don't realize he ain't still fighting. Worst case scenario, he's always in the wrong place. At the wrong time. You know, whatever happened in this scenario. You know, this is someone he knew in college. This is something we're going on. For a lot of sexual assault victims, it takes a while to even come to terms to be able to come out and to have these conversations. So I always am reluctant to talk about timing issues just because when you know who you're dealing with, that means you're going to be in the limelight and just being able – sometimes the best time to do it is when it's hottest because that person's willingness to counter you in a way that could be damaging physically, whatever, is probably lower because of the visibility of it. You know, they're going to act right versus when it ain't hot. And so timing stuff I always kind of stay away from when it comes to these kinds of issues. I let the courts and everybody else work that out. But from him, I watched the Rodman 30 for 30. I was struck by the way in which our past still informs our decision-making. We can never break out of it, whether it's poverty, whatever. These things – you know, that social capital, knowing how to network, how to win them, do this. That's why having people around you who have a strong personality is important, right? It's like you make those decisions. You know this group we hang with. Somebody going to pull your collar. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, Darnell start messing up, we're going to tap him on the shoulder.
Right.
Youngin, you know, hey, that's not where you're going. Darnell know that, you know, and I don't see anybody around him. So when your best friend is your agent like Drew, you in trouble. Because not to say Drew is not a good guy, but that ain't who Drew is. Like, you got to have people around you who tell you to settle the hell down. So one thing I could say about, even about, I can appreciate about LeBron and his group around, like, they're not the kind of cats. People see it on the surface, but you could tell they challenge you enough to keep their stuff straight. And I don't see that around him. And I worry about that when you don't have those kind of people around you. And I think that's all a part of this. And, you know, he don't have nobody tugging his shoulder, you know, or whatever. So I think it just spiraled, right? And he also came to the top of his game in Pittsburgh at a time when people like Palomar and some of the leadership in that locker room was retiring. Like, the kind of people who would tap you on the shoulder were, like, exiting stage left. You would pull somebody over to the side and say, so he had this window where he was kind of growing in his own personality. But when I watched Robin's 30 for 30, it started to make me think about why he's behaving the way he's behaving. And why he says the big thing he says about people coming after me. And, you know, he uses the religious undertones about explaining his situation in ways that if me and you were around him, we would say, hold up, fool. This ain't how it works. But he ain't got nobody around him saying that.
But it sounds to me, though, is that even those that's around him that's trying to guide him, he throws them under the bus. Okay? It just seems to me, just with the last couple of coaches, it seemed to me.
But they don't
like,
have those kind of relationships because he don't trust them. He sees them as doing that for their own benefit. He read that game. That's street game. That's street game.
Yeah.
We all got to, you know, I love you, Gruden, but I know what you're trying to do. So I'm not trusting you either. Like, you and I wouldn't trust that conversation.
Right.
Because
right.
It's really about me producing for you and your $100 million, right? That's not about you caring about me. You know, probably the one that hurt the most is probably Tomlin, because Tomlin was probably that guy. Tomlin was that guy.
But then I have to go all the way back to, like, even when he was at Central.
Yeah.
You know, who did he talk to back then? I mean, and did any of those people advise him, or did he even himself think that he was going to blow up to be not Antonio Brown, but AB? You know, and sometimes what happens with a lot of these athletes and even entertainers is they take on that persona of that character and they lose themselves. So instead of being Antonio Brown, he becomes AB. And whoever AB is, you know, is almost incorrigible, in compared to who he used to be. And money does that, fame does that. You know, the fact that his departure from Pittsburgh and how that whole thing went down, that thing was ugly and it didn't need to be. And so now what you see is just an extension of that, and now that he's away from that Pittsburgh, and dare I say some of that Pittsburgh discipline, that he's lost his mind. And so now he goes to New England. Like I said, what I call, the NFL's corporate America, and he's going to have to straighten up because they don't have to put up with him.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's going to figure it out. We're going to keep our eye on this, we know the game doesn't change for him, so we know that. We know that's true. All right, the Browns, who was the media darling for going to Super Bowl.
I'm wearing my watch.
Everybody wearing the watches, doing all that, had all the words to say. Everybody in the roster had something to say before the game. And then the Titans came to town. And the Titans basically said, they are who D. Will said they were.
Right.
That's what he said. After 18 penalties and 3 turnovers in a subpar performance, even by their defense, as well as Baker, the Titans beat them up, pushed them around. What do you think, Hank? I'll start with you and then go to Darnell. Where do you think the Browns go from here? They got a game coming against the Jets. Jets gonna be playing without Sam, so you know they got a benefit there. But you know, you never know. Where do you think you can go? You already got Odell coming out talking about the defensive coordinator, former defensive coordinator for the Cleveland Browns, Greg Williams, about you know promoting cheap shots. Where do you think they go from here, man?
Listen, this is what I was concerned about. When you have a rookie head coach, all right, we talked about this in our preview. When you got a rookie head coach and you got all of these personalities up in there and you got to figure out a way to keep them all on the same page, if you don't, you're just going to have a very talented team, but you're going to have an awful lot of chaos. There was no way, there was nothing that anybody seen in week one that told us that Cleveland was going to lose to Tennessee. Okay? Let's just go by what we know. We know that we thought that Mariota was shaky. Okay? We said this. We said that we was concerned about the offensive line. We thought Cleveland was going to be too talented. We thought Baker Mayfield was the guy, yada, 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 yada. The one thing that we didn't understand, what we was concerned with, was this rookie head coach. And we saw it. Okay, you say what you want to about Mike Vrabel, but Vrabel knows how to coach, and his team came ready, and they whooped Cleveland's butt. Cleveland is in trouble. Okay, this is going to me. This has all the makings of a major league collapse because they did not start off well. Okay, and it's going to get worse with all you got. You're going to have a lot of factions in that locker room. Baker Mayfield is going to have to take over the reins and be the leader right away. And if he doesn't play well, nobody's going to listen to them because Beckham Jr., Odell Beckham Jr., those guys are veterans. Okay, they've been in the league a few years, but Baker's been here, what's his second, third year? They're not going to listen to him if he can't lead. Okay, and if the coach ain't got no cachet, that's a problem. That's a big problem, especially when you got this much time. This is going to be fun to watch because this could turn real quick into one of the biggest soap operas in the NFL, okay, and I was concerned about that, and now it looked like it could happen, and one more bad loss, and it's the same old Browns.
Well, hey, they're getting all the sound bites they want. They got it. They got a special podcast segment on NFL radio on Sirius. You know, everybody was trying to capture that dog pound mode, but they came out and laid a dud on it. Darnell, I know you've been, I think you were supportive of Cleveland and saw them as a team. That was, you know, you had the basketball hoop perspective. They put all the all-stars in the room. They're going to make it happen. You know, where do you see them going from here?
Oh, well, I was supportive of both teams. The Tennessee Titans were my favorite team in the AFC South. But the Cleveland Browns, it was a bad showing for them. They got to get it together, and I think they will. They just got to get time to gel together, and once they get it clicking, I think they're still going to be a good football team. But they have their matchup this week should be a favorable one with the Jets, especially with Trevor Siemian starting at quarterback. They should be they should hold them to at least they shouldn't score any more than two touchdowns. So. I believe the Browns should win the next game. So it all starts – they got to take it 1 week at a time. So pretty much that's how it's going to have to go.
I mean, they've been blessed. Sam Darnold got Bono. I'm like, that feels middle school to me, high school to me. Like, that's when you heard people get Bono. I was like, grown people get Bono? Like, I always get nervous when grown people get mumps. I'm like, that is not a time to get mumps. You know, that's a person's disease where your body can do something. But when you get mono, I'm just like, man, I felt like I'm back at Slauson Junior High. I'm like, what's
that's
going
funny.
On with the mono on the street? I'm like, my goodness. Baker must have gone to Miss Rudolph and played on something, put his feet
you
in something, something crazy. Put a spell on him. All right, you listen to the one mic here on the Real Sports Guys platform. Please go to realsportsguys.com and catch this podcast and all the other podcasts. We're in the cipher. The game doesn't change. The last topic we'll cover here in this cipher for this one, we got a couple ones we're gonna leave for later on. Is you know, in all of this, my Steelers, I'm gonna say it like this: got smoked in Foxborough. I had a feeling they were going to not win that in Foxborough just because of the way the team was developing the youth in certain spots. But I didn't see that they were going to get smoked like this. And now you got people up here disrespecting Tomlin again, even though his winning percentage and his losses, a lot of losses come to Belichick, who's probably the greatest of all time as a coach. A couple questions come up is, you know, will they make the playoffs? And there's been this ranking about where you rank Tomlin. I heard Will Cain with some ridiculous ranking on where he ranked Tomlin. But I was interested about where you guys rank Tomlin in terms of active coaches. I have him at worst third or fourth, depending on, you know, where you want to put Sean Payton and John Harbaugh in terms of what they've been doing with coaching. You know, bringing people like McVay and these guys in here, I'm like, you got to give me a little bit more evidence about where you're at. Doug Peterson, you know, you slumped up and down. Tomlin has not had a losing season. Like, some of these guys have had a losing season. Don't give me Andy Reid. He's lost more big games than anybody. But I hear arguments about he was able to build two organizations. Andy Reid has consistently lost big games. In times you haven't done it, we can go back to Don McNabb years. So I want to get a little opinion on that about that. But just where you see these Steelers are and what this conversation is going on. I'll start with you, Darnell, because I know you want a couple hot takes. Kick a brother when he's down. Yeah.
Man, the Steelers. First of all, they made the – I'm very high on the Patriots' defense, but the Steelers made their defense look like the 2002 Bucks or the 05 Ravens or something, man. They were – Ben Roethlisberger had that confused look on his face, like, where did Antonio Brown go? Where did Le'Veon Bell go? I don't know what's going on right now. You got that one receiver – I forgot his name. He hurt his finger. But he said, I got to keep playing because Big Ben needs me. And they got to right the ship. But looks like the Ravens are going to be in a very good spot coming up, I guess.
All right, Hank, where you at?
Listen, I don't think that was an indictment at all against the Steelers. More I thought it was what the New England Patriots look like. The Patriots look like a well-oiled machine. Okay, they look dangerous. They look scary. All right, on both sides of the ball. Sometimes you could just say they were meh, but they look solid, and that's scary. They look like that team that went 18-0. Okay, before the Super Bowl. That's what they look like to me. I don't take nothing away from the Steelers and Tomlin. Tomlin has, like you said, that's a solid team. But there's other teams around them right now that arguably look better. I don't think anybody saw Lamar Jackson losing his mind like he did on Sunday. I don't think we thought that we was going to see the Louisville Lamar Jackson, okay, in the NFL. And we did. And that changes the dynamic of what the Ravens looks like. The New England Patriots look better than advertised, okay? That doesn't mean that the Steelers aren't a good team. I think the Steelers are still very solid. Okay, but they started on the road against the Super Bowl champions. They had all that hype and stuff going on. That's hard for anybody to do. Okay, they came out with blood in their eyes, but Belichick knows how to get his team ready. Okay, I think you just watch the Steelers. The Steelers is a team. You can sleep on them if you want to. But like I told you, I think they're very solid. I think they're going to make a playoff push. But I had initially picked the Ravens to win that division. Until I saw the Steelers, but the Ravens and Lamar Jackson is better. He's much better.
Yeah.
I think he's better than anybody sitting around here thought he was going to be. And that is a huge factor for that team. Okay?
I think you hit a really good one. And Harbaugh knows how to scheme. They know how to build a system around him. But he's throwing from the pocket. He's doing everything. Throws he makes are the throws you're going to see him make. I mean, you didn't see anything in his timing, and people could talk about Miami, whatever, but the progression of how his timing was, you could tell he worked on his stuff. That was fundamentals. It wasn't just, you know, who he was playing. I think he just, he has worked on his fundamentals, and you can see it. You can see it paying off.
Right. Don't knock your Steelers yet. It's early. Just know that they played probably the best team in the NFL at home to start the season. Okay. Good luck with that.
Yeah, and one of the things that Tomlin often says that, you know, he likes to create a little bit of anxiety and stress in a situation. Like, that's important for him to get people to react. This game right here gave him everything he needs. This is going to be, on both offense and defense, a coaching tape for the next 3 weeks. Because what Belichick showed him everything they're going to see and might not see with other teams. And when if you go back and look at listen to the preview, because I knew this was going to be a tough game, what I said it was going to be most tough is for their defensive backs and their young linebackers, because they were running all over the place. And this is the kind of thing when you go to coaching sessions, you know, you're going to be able to take a Devin Bush and Barons and some of all these guys, and you're going to be able to spend time with them understanding the technical mistakes they made. And not playing. So this is, I think, for him, a great coaching tape. I think the one worry is about Ben, because Ben has never been a timing person. And when you have young receivers, a young receiving core, you don't have AB and some of these guys who can just on the fly. Getting the ball there when they expect to see the ball is important to them, because they don't want to mess up. And I think his ability and then they didn't run the football well. And they need to really, you know, not having Munchak in, you know, that offensive line coach, you know, how's that offensive line going to gel? But them losing was something, you know, you don't like to see a team lose, but I expect them to lose because I just didn't think they had the personnel and the experience to go into Foxborough in that opening game and be ready where they were. You know, if they're playing them probably, you know, 8-9 games in, I think that defense will be where it needs to be. But at this point, I knew it was going to be a mismatch, but I didn't think it was going to be that much. So I think y'all made some great points about this, and we'll just monitor them and see how they go on the way out. All right, we had a lot we hit today. We had a couple other things we were going to hit, but we'll hit those things next time. We're going to do what we always do to close this thing out for you new listeners, and for you old ones, you know, hey, there's some wisdom about to be dropped. I'm going to give it to my man Hank to drop the mic.
Thank you. And this afternoon, we're going to drop the mic. We're going to keep it in the NFL. And I just want to take a moment to acknowledge the Miami Dolphins. Now, you might ask me, of all the teams you want to acknowledge, why would you want to acknowledge the Miami Dolphins? Because the Miami Dolphins in the NFL is a team of first, okay? They were the first and the only team, okay, back in the 70s to go undefeated Super Bowl champions, the only undefeated team in the NFL, okay, in the modern era. And now the Miami Dolphins come out again as another team of first. They are the first NFL team to openly tank in the NFL. I'm stunned by this revelation. Because if you think about the NFL outside of the NBA or Major League Baseball or even hockey, the average career of an NFL player is about a little over 3 years. That's the average, okay? But what the Miami Dolphins have chosen to do is say, we're going to get rid of all of our young talent. We're going to get rid of all these guys. And we're going to openly let the whole world know we ain't trying to win a damn thing this year, okay? We're going to stockpile a bunch of draft picks. We're gonna have our players, you know, have a revolt and want a mutiny, and they all want to get traded even before the national anthem is sung in the opening day. So don't be surprised, and you saw it, that the Ravens come out, hang 59 on them on opening day. All right. Yet you still got to pay top dollar to go see them play if you're in South Beach. You still got to pay the parking fees and everything. And they're going to sell you with, oh, but we're going to be great. I did my homework, so you don't have to do it, okay? Of all the teams out there in all four sports that have, you know, quote-unquote tanked to try to get that brass ring, that prize, all those draft picks, there has not been one of those teams that has gone on to win championships. Or you can think about the Philadelphia 76ers. They've made it to the playoffs, but you've not seen them in the finals. You can think about other teams. You can say, oh, what about LeBron James in Cleveland? Well, he left Cleveland, finally won his championship in Miami, and then decided to come back to Cleveland as a free agent. So that really doesn't count, does it? Okay? You can go back to the old Los Angeles San Diego Clippers in the NBA and Elgin Baylor, back when they was getting first-round draft picks every year just because of poor management and didn't win nothing. To this date, still have never been to an NBA Finals. Tanking doesn't work because the knuckleheads who tank are supposed to be the same knuckleheads that you're supposed to trust to bring in talent, to develop teams, to hire coaches, to get your team ready. So I just want to say for a moment to the Miami Dolphins, but other teams say, oh, no, we're not tanking. We'll never do that. We would never want to mess up the sanctity and the integrity of the game, not the Dolphins. The Dolphins say, hey, Laremy Tunsil, you gone. Steals, you gone. Anybody else, y'all getting pissed off, you can go too. You got players going to the agents demanding trades. This is even before they sell the first ticket of the first game. So, Miami Dolphins, at least I want to say thank you for being open enough, for being candid enough, for being bold and ballsy enough to say, you know what? Even though the average player's only got 3 years in the league, we're going to tank your first one. Good job, guys. Good job. Way to go. Great play. This is Hank. We'll talk to you next time. Peace.
This thing right here,
yeah.
Is for my people in the streets.
Yes, yes, today. Yes, yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.